I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. What do taxes have to do with Veterans Day? I'll tell you in my Can I Just Tell You commentary in just a few minutes. But first, this week we go behind closed doors to tell a story that's all about skin color, yet has nothing to do with racism. It's about vitiligo. It's a disease that happens to people of every race, but is especially noticeable and challenging for people with darker skin, especially those who earn their living in the public eye. Pop star Michael Jackson said he had it years ago, explaining why he'd chosen to bleach his skin, but few believed him then. Anchor and entertainment reporter Lee Thomas did, because he also has vitiligo. He talks about the challenge of living with the disease in a new memoir, Turning White, a memoir of change. Lee Thomas joins us now. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Oh, first of all, thank you very much, Michelle. I appreciate the time.
First of all, what is vitiligo?
It's a pigment disorder. It's in the autoimmune disorder category. And basically what it is your body starts eating its own pigment and you're void of pigment. It looks like white, but you're really completely void of any kind of pigment or color. And it happens to everybody of all nationalities, any age. It's not contagious. It's not life-threatening in any way. And just like a lot of autoimmune disorders, it's random without any kind of idea of which way it's going to go.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that if your father has it, you'll have it. There's no one else in your family who has it.
There's no one else in my family who hasn't. We went back as far as my mother's great-grandmother, as far as we could talk to people. And no, that is one of the theories, though, that there is genetic link. But it's only a theory because there are no concrete evidence that that is the true link. A lot of people say also that it's linked to thyroid conditions as well. Those are the two prominent ones that I've heard the most.
So with you, it started as a small patch on your scalp. When did you realize it was something more serious that caused you to seek medical attention?
It started, like you said, on my scalp, and then that one actually started to fill in, but two more came on the other side of my scalp, and two came on my hand, and one came in the corner of my mouth where I started losing pigment there, and that's when I went to a doctor. I was working in New York at WABC in New York, and I was an entertainment reporter there, and really started to freak out. I mean, I'm turning white, and I couldn't understand it. I didn't get it, and I went to a regular doctor. He said, go to a dermatologist. Went to a dermatologist, and he said, basically, you have a disease called vitiligo, and there is no cure. And wow, you know.
What went through your mind when you heard that? I mean, this is...
First of all, I got a little mad at him because you're not used to doctors saying that because they're supposed to fix everything. So I'm like, what are you talking about, doc? You're a doctor. You should have some answer for me. But really, there was no cure when I got it 15 years ago, and there is no cure now. And it was very worrisome. I was scared for my livelihood, for my job. I worked very hard, you know.
Well,
to
just
get
I
where
think just
I
to
was.
Explain to people that WABC is like the flagship affiliate of, you know, a major network, and you were there. You know, you
I was
were
there.
In the catbird seat.
Yeah,
something
I was.
You had
I was,
always wanted.
Yes, and then I get this almost like a sentence that my career was over, that the dream had ended. Finally, someone got the pen out and punched the balloon because. At that time, I could not fathom a black man turning white on live television. I mean, you know, the news is live. The news is now, and it's nonstop, and it's a rigorous business. We both understand the rigors of it, and I just didn't see a way of keeping my job while having a disease like this.
But you wear makeup anyway. I know very few people who work in a studio who don't.
Right.
So was it really that big of a deal? I mean, forgive me, but I mean, it's orders of magnitude. But was it really that much of a leap to say, okay, well, I'll wear some makeup? Why do you think you were so devastated that that didn't occur to you?
I didn't like wearing a lot of makeup, and I wish I could go without it at the time, even though I liked the powder just so I didn't shine. But I actually had to buy new makeup. And also, my hands, as my hands continued to change, people would literally stare at my hands, still do. So it would distract from my job. It became a concern. It's a distraction. My hands are in the shot. They're at the desk. They're on the desk. There are cooking segments when you have to use your hands. And immediately anything that's in that shot or in that environment that takes away from the message, what you're saying, what you're interviewing someone about, is taking away from you being able to do your job at its best.
So what did you do?
I was very concerned.
Did you go to talk to management? Did you say, look, this is what's happening to me? What'd you do?
I didn't. I decided to actually go and try to figure it out on my own and just hide it from management at that point.
Did that work?
It did. I mean, I left New York. I got the job here in Detroit and still hiding it with makeup. And as it progressed, that's when I went to management. When it was something that I could not hide or chose not to try and hide anymore, I went to management and said, look, I don't know what's going to happen. I could turn completely white, and I don't know if I'm going to want to stay or leave, especially when it started to take over my face. It became what I call a war within, where it was really me fighting with me to deal with what I call the outside.
Well, that's exactly, I wanted to ask you about that. When you said you weren't sure you wanted to stay, why? Why would you give up your dream? Was it really that hard? I mean, I'm just trying to ask, what was it like for you? Did people stare at you on the street?
Everyone. It's one thing to walk in a room and you're the TV guy and everybody goes, hey, here's a TV guy. And some people watch your channel, some people don't. Some people know you, some people don't. But it's another thing to walk into the room and get the look of shock and awe, disheartened. Some people are immediately sad when they see you. And then the reaction from children was also very difficult because they're very honest. And everybody isn't as nice as we'd like for them to be. And some of their comments are very harsh. And
like what?
I got called chocolate and vanilla. What's wrong with your face? One lady, I was in a grocery store line getting my groceries. This is recent. And I go to pay and I go, how much is it? The lady behind me goes, you sound just like that guy who's on Fox 2. And I go, really? Do you like that guy? She's like, yeah, he's all right. But I tell you what, if it wasn't for your face, you have a dead on his voice. So what do you say to all of those kinds of comments? And at some point, you know, especially a few years ago, it just became a barrage of almost too much. And I had to learn how to deal with them and how to learn how to turn the situation, because I'm a very positive person and I fight for that positivity. And
it sounds like it.
And I had to fight to regain my positivity and maintain myself.
You don't wear makeup outside of work.
When I'm working, makeup. When I'm not, nope. Going about my daily life. It's a choice, you know. I am who I am, and this is the struggle that I go through. And everybody has a struggle that they go through or obstacles they have to overcome in their life. You can just see one of mine, but it clearly does not define who I am. And if you choose to have a problem because of it, the onus is not on me. And I'm not harboring anything against you for it.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News, and I'm speaking with Lee Thomas. He's the author of Turning White. It's a memoir about his struggle with vitiligo. You were really candid in the book, I have to say, about the way this has affected your social life.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, you went through this period of not really knowing that if you were rejected by a woman, is it because of you? You know, maybe your rap wasn't, you know, tight enough?
Yeah.
Or was it the disease? And I just wonder if you still struggle with that.
You know, I do struggle with it, but the struggle isn't as long or as intense as it used to be. And yes, I do have a girlfriend now, and I'm just amazed that she loves me like I am sometimes, but she does. But I don't think I would have met her if I didn't change my philosophy, because it was stopping me from talking to people because I don't know if they can deal with it, or I go on a date and the girl doesn't want to kiss me at the end of the date, but we've been hanging out the whole time and I'm not wearing my makeup because I'm not at work. So did she not want to kiss me because she wasn't feeling me, or did she not want to kiss me because even though she wanted to hang out with me, she can't deal with kissing this face?
The other thing that struck me was that one of the things you are known for is your entertainment interviews. I mean, you interview all the big stars. It's been part of your portfolio for years. Mm-hmm. Such an appearance-oriented business. And I, you know, all these people are, not all of them, most of them are gorgeous. And if they didn't start out that way, they put a lot of money into looking that way. Does that bring anything up for you when you do these interviews now?
It's funny because I'm sitting in a chair across from an actress, and she says, I think I'm getting a blemish. And I started laughing because it was so funny to me. She's worried about a little pimple. And 50% of my face is white, you know?
Well,
I'm a freckled black man.
But that's exactly my question. Is it making it hard for you to put up with their stuff sometimes? You think you got to be kidding me, right?
No, not at all. It's all just funny to me. You know, I don't look at it as, you know, this is what I'm going through, but I know that they live in this very cosmetic business. I'm fortunate to be at my end of the business. I was worried about one of them going, you know, the guy with the white hands and the black face, I don't want to talk to him anymore. And it was just
happened?
A worry. It never has. I've never lost an interview or anything because of my disease. And
but you know what? The
I
other thought
LA,
that occurs to
know.
Me, though, is the whole mm-hmm. Michael Jackson story, because I have to be
right.
honest, I do not believe that most people thought he was telling the truth about it.
I don't think they did either.
And I think partly because he's so cosmetically altered in all these mm-hmm. other ways. I mean, and, you know.
I understand completely. And the real example for me with Michael Jackson is I can confirm it was on my left hand first. I used to wear one glove when it wasn't exactly winter just because I wanted to cover my left hand when I wasn't covering it with makeup. You know, I understand. And the treatment is to bleach if it gets over 80% of your
skin.
Wait
a minute. You did the same thing? You wore one glove?
I would wear one glove when it was on one hand. And it was funny to me when I'd look back and go, man, people looked at that as a fashion statement when I completely understand the guy was covering. The example I take from him is to not hide. I understand why he's so reclusive. I've met a lot of vitiligo patients who are afraid to go outside. But to be reclusive does not help the situation. And that's the example I take from Michael Jackson. If he wasn't so reclusive, I think people would have understood him a lot more, and it wouldn't have gotten to the persona that it is today. So the example I took from him was to, you know what, tell your story, be as open as possible.
Finally, Lee, I wanted to ask you, does this raise any interesting observations for you about race?
You know, I've grappled with this as this has happened to me because as an African-American man who chooses the news business, you go through certain changes. You know, people make certain assumptions about you because you speak a certain way or, you know, you dress a certain way that you're not this or you are that. And I grappled with it minorly as my face started to change. This disease has forced me to clearly define myself as a man and as an African-American man. So it's something that I don't grapple with anymore. But it's just interesting what people see. I was on a plane, a long plane ride coming home, and I had on one of those hooded jackets. So I pulled the hood because I was going to go to sleep. So all you could see is, just a little bit of the small of my face. And then you could see my hands.
And, which are quite pale. For those who haven't seen the book yet, quite pale. And your book, I have to say, has some very interesting photographs showing the progression of the disease. Very beautifully shot, but go ahead.
Oh, and the guy next to me, he says, do you mind if I ask you a question? I go, no, man, I'm open book, because I had been talking to him anyway. And he says, are you African-American or are you Caucasian? I just laughed, and I go, you know what? You're right. 50% of my face is white, 50% is black, and my hands are completely white. But I'm all brother. I am. It's coming from the heart. So I guess I just have to tell him. I don't mind telling him, but yeah, I am African-American, man. And then we had a long conversation. He was such a nice guy. But, I understand. And to the pictures for a second, I just thought it was important for people to see. You know, the thing that started this whole thing was a kid called and asked me to tell my story because he has vitiligo. And he said people would treat him differently. And that's what made me tell my story in the beginning. And I'm completely shocked and amazed and in awe of how the story has taken off, because I realize that I'm speaking for a lot of people now. And I think my story has gotten even bigger than that. But for vitiligo patients, I think it's important for people to be able to look and not feel bad about looking. So you don't have to look at me. You mm-hmm. can look at the pictures in the book.
Okay.
And you can get as comfortable with them as you want. And then the next time you see somebody that has vitiligo, it'll give you pause to give them a little more compassion maybe on the other end of it.
Lee Thomas is a television broadcaster with Fox News Channel 2 in Detroit. He's the author of Turning White, a memoir of change. It's available now. He joined us from WDET in Detroit. Lee, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Michelle Martin, I really appreciate the time, and I got a lot of respect for you as well. Thank you.